news has certainly been in the news a lot lately, and Donald Trump has made that all too prevalent in our ears and our hearing. But it is a little bit frightening. While misinformation and propaganda have probably been with humanity as long as humans have spoken to each other, the internet has changed the way it looks a little bit. And in some recent studies, educated young people who are, well grounded in university kind of research and knowing where to look for information have been proposed to go online and actually find good news and to rank websites. abc.com.co sounds like a legitimate news organisation. Unfortunately, it isn't. It's a fake news site, and they produce fake news. Sadly, it ranked quite highly in the survey. And being Australians, we would probably trust something like ABC ourselves, but not .com.co. It does raise a question. Christians need to be careful not to fall for fake news. We need to be careful not to fall for fake news. Now, if you can cast your mind back a couple of weeks ago, Gordo was up here and he spoke to us from 2 Peter chapter 1, and the picture that was painted in that chapter was an exciting picture. There was a glorious kind of image, a glorious kind of painting there, and it was of people who were saved by faith in Jesus Christ, moving into lives of contentment and godliness, and that they were we are receiving a rich inheritance, and we are sharing in the promises of God's glory. It actually talks about us being part of the divine nature. What an exciting picture. People saved to live lives of joy with God and share in the glory of heaven. Chapter 2, which we've just had read to us, paints a completely different picture. It starts off with that "but," and it's a complete contrast. It depicts tragic, horrific scenes of swift and complete destruction on those who teach false things and those who listen to those false teachings. And three historic examples are used to talk about the swift and complete destruction of those who fall for false news or fake news. The first example in verse 4 is of sinning angels. "If God did not spare angels when they sinned, but sent them to hell, putting them in chains of darkness to be held for judgment." Now, the details of this verse are a little bit uncertain. It could be referring to Satan and the demons that, you know, accompany him, or it could be referring to a section in Genesis 6 where the sons of God have relationships with the women of men. And then the giants of old come out. People aren't exactly sure, but the judgment is real. And the judgment is there to be seen, and that's the point. Verse 5 talks about the flood. "If he did not spare the ancient world when he brought the flood on its ungodly people." The flood is a popular kids' story that we teach, but really, when you think about it, it's pretty tragic and it's pretty horrific that the whole population of the world was wiped out apart from 8 people. There's a seriousness to false teaching and false ideas. And then verse 6, Sodom and Gomorrah. "If he condemned the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah by burning them to ashes and made them an example of what is going to happen to the ungodly." Two completely different pictures. Chapter 1, eternal joy and contentment with God, sharing in divine glory, and another picture of eternal destruction. What's the difference? Well, it's the messenger and the message. Chapter 1, the gift of life and growing faith is testified to by Peter. Peter is an eyewitness. He was there with Jesus. He spoke with him. He witnessed the teaching. He saw the miracles, the death, and then the resurrection and his ascension up into heaven. And Peter also has his mind focused on the future. He's looking forward to future judgment, to the time when Jesus returns and sorts everything out in this world. See, Peter is a messenger who is focused on Jesus and he's focused on the future. But the contrast in chapter 2 is of false teachers who are focused on themselves and they're focused on now. The false teachers are characterized by, verse 2, a depraved conduct. Verse 3 and 14, greed. In verse 10, bold arrogance. In verse 12, they are ignorant and they are blasphemous. In verse 12, we're told that they act like animals by instinct, right in the moment. Something's affecting me now and I'll respond in the now. That verse 13, they live for pleasure and carousing in the daylight. Verse 14, they're adulterous. And verse 19, they're being enslaved to depravity. You see, the focus on the false teachers, for the false teachers, is on themselves. And it's not on future judgment, but it's on their pleasures right now. And if you trace the picture through, it actually talks about the way that they use their mouths, the way that they use their eyes, and the way that their hearts are focused. It's a complete failure for them to be focused on the right things, Jesus and the future. And because of that, the result is in that the message that they teach is in stark contrast to the truth. See, Peter in chapter 1 talks about God's grace, developing your faith so that you add to it virtue and knowledge and self-control. And if you remember, Gordon told us that we need to cultivate that, and it's like a difficult plant, but it's a plant that's worth putting the time and effort into. And that moves towards us towards love. But the message of the false teachers is different. It's a sham. It exploits you. It doesn't mature you. In verse 3, in their greed, these teachers will exploit you with fabricated stories. It's also a false hope. Verse 17, these people are springs without water and mists driven by a storm. There's a promise there of freedom, we're told. They promise freedom, but they're actually slaves and they make you a slave to sin. And in verse 1, it's destructive. They will introduce destructive heresies, even denying the sovereign Lord who bought them. Different messenger, different message. These messages, false messages, are all around us. If we just think of consumerism, give us your money and we'll give you a house and you'll be happy. Give us your money, we'll give you the holiday and you'll be happy. Or the phone or the car that give you the right image so that you'll be accepted by society. Or your wildest dreams will come true if you just have this thing. But consumerism and materialism isn't there to actually give you joy and actually to mature you to be ready for heaven. It's just there to exploit you for profit. And there's other messages which are much, much less subtle and hopefully we can see as obviously false, where religion tells you to act in violence or to act in murder. Hopefully we can reject that outright. But loads of people are falling for these messages. But the worst kind of false news or fake news or false message is that which comes from or appears to come from within the truth. And this is really the focus of what Peter is talking about in this passage. You think from the beginning, he's talking about teachers who have been bought. In verse 20 to 22, we'll see that there are people here who have had an understanding of the righteousness. All through the passage, there's these hints. Verse 2, of bringing the truth into disrepute. The worst kind of teaching for us as a community of faith is that comes out of our community of faith. And verse 1 says false news or fake news is what comes secretly. It's secretly introduced. Because how easy would it be if every false teacher wore a t-shirt that said false teacher? And they prefaced everything they said with, "This is not true." You'd avoid it, wouldn't you? When some of you know that I love to spearfish, and when you spearfish, you free dive, which means you hold a breath and you go under the water. And in a lot of the free diving manuals in the past, they talked about hyperventilation as being this excellent way that you can spend more time under the water. And so you breathe rapidly and deeply, and you dive under the water, and you can stay down there for longer than you ever have before. It seems like a great idea. The problem is that hyperventilation can kill you. And people have died, sadly, hyperventilating. Because it doesn't actually give you a longer time under the water. It just tells your brain that you don't actually need to take a breath when you do. So you die. It seems good, but it's actually really deadly. And false teaching is the same. It often has the appearance of truth. It has a great allure. It can sucker us in because it seems good, but it simply makes you discontented. And it simply leads you to destruction. Verse 14, which is probably a key verse of the whole passage, and you should have a look at it. It talks about the false teachers seducing or enticing the unstable. And I love this, being a fisherman, because the term is actually a fishing term. It's like putting a bait on a hook or throwing out a lure, and the fish thinks, "Wow, that looks exciting," and grabs it. And it's ensnared and it's destroyed. Well, unless they're catch and release. It's dangerous. And Peter says the false message which comes into our midst is dangerous. He says, verse 20, "If they have escaped the corruption of the world by knowing our Lord and Saviour Jesus Christ, and are again entangled in it and are overcome, they are worse off at the end than they are at the beginning. It would have been better for them not to have known the way of righteousness, but then to have known it and turn their backs on the sacred command that was passed on to them. Of them, the proverbs are true: a dog returns to its vomit, and a sow that is washed returns to her wallowing in the mud." And it's so tragic when you think of people who might be seeking the truth, and they come into a place where the truth should be taught, and it's not there. It makes me so angry and sad at the same time that there's people who have led even our own denomination and they would deny the resurrection of Jesus. How tragic that people would talk to them and say, "You're a Christian, tell me about how I can have hope." And they're told such a lie that will lead them to destruction. So this is a serious thing that we need to worry about. It's a serious thing that we need to stand up for. Well, how can we protect ourselves from being people who miss out on the truth, that go back to the mud or return to our vomit, so to speak? Well, Peter warns that there will be false teachers, verse 1. It's not something that we should sort of hope won't happen to us and just try and ignore it. And verse 14 tells us that it preys on the unstable. So we need to be prepared. And I think the ways that we can be prepared are four things I'm going to talk about. First of all, that truth matters. Peter tells us that truth matters in chapter 1. Jesus tells us as he was standing in front of Pilate at his trial that he came to talk about the truth and that the truth is important. And in our society, most people have this attitude to truth, which is, does it really matter? It doesn't really matter. And we echo Pilate way back then when he said, "Oh, what is truth? Isn't it all just subjective to whatever political powers are in play at the time?" And I explain this to my students at school, and I talk about different types of truth. I talk about beetroot truth, and I talk about bus truth. And I say, beetroot truth is this: a hamburger must have beetroot, otherwise it's not a hamburger. It's just a piece of bread with some meat and cheese and whatever else is on it. It's not a hamburger. Now, you might say, "No, you're wrong. And I'll say, no, you're wrong. It's subjective, isn't it? That's a subjective truth. For me, it's true that a hamburger must have beetroot, but maybe not for you. And that's probably okay. You're allowed to have your hamburger, if you can call it that, without beetroot if you want. But bus truth is really, really different, because you can be standing on the edge of a freeway and the buses are moving past at 100 k's an hour and you can say, do you know what, I really believe it's true that I can step out in front of this bus and that's not going to wipe me out. I'm going to be fine. Let's do it. I believe it really sincerely. And you can step out and that's bus truth. Christianity is bus truth. It matters what you believe and it matters what you speak to people and it matters that you have conversations and you say some things are just true and these are the reasons why. Some people will like to say just believe whatever you want and it's all true. I think the second thing we need to focus on if we're going to be prepared for false teachers and false teaching is we need to be focused on the end. The problem of the false teachers is they're just focused on themselves and they're focused on the here and now. We need to be focused on the end. It's good for you to think about your death. Now, I know that sounds morbid, but Ecclesiastes says the same thing. 7 verse 2, it says, it is better to be in a house of mourning than in a place of feasting. Think about the future that you have after your short life here on earth. And in doing so, it will actually help you to have joy and contentment and satisfaction right now, as disappointing as thinking about your death might be. The roller coaster ride of life, it does go up and down. But if we're focused on the end goal, it cuts through those ups and downs in a way that's really, really helpful. And I wish I could do it better. Point three, we need to know our sources. We need to be good historians. Peter, in the second half of chapter 1, which I think Gordo's going to speak more on in a few weeks for us, Peter gives his credentials. He says, look, I'm an eyewitness. I was there with Jesus. I saw it happen. I saw the glory. I saw him transformed on that mountain when he met with Elijah and Abraham. Moses. There you go. Thank you. If you have any questions about the reliability of the Bible, you need to ask those questions because as Christians, we say the message in the Bible is true. It's there because of eyewitnesses. It's reliable. It's unchanged. It's not like the Roman Catholic Church will introduce new doctrines and execute people for heresy, which is not based on any truth. So make sure you're in the Bible. Make sure you take time to look at it. Make sure you take time when you're in a church like this to check what we're saying. That's why we publicly read scripture. That's why we have Bible study together. Don't give up on those things because it stops you falling for lies. The Bible is God's revealed truth. And four, I think we need to be reassured because the truth wins. The truth sets you free. The false messages cannot beat the truth. The fake news cannot win, and it will not win. If you look at the examples that Peter gives of the flood, it sounds awful, but hey, there's Noah and his family. And you look at Sodom and Gomorrah, and the whole place is wiped off the face of the earth, but there is Lot and his kids. It is worth sticking to the truth in the end. So let's think about the fact that truth is important. Let's focus on the end. Let's know our sources and be confident that the Bible tells us what it tells us. And let's be reassured that in the end, the truth matters. Well, what is the truth that we believe in? From 2 Peter chapter 1. His divine power has given us everything we need for life and godliness through the knowledge of him who called us by his own glory and goodness. Through these, he has given us a very great and precious promise so that through them you might participate in the divine nature and escape the corruption of this world. Let me pray.